Welcome to another episode of the No Ceilings Podcast. I'm Tyler Metcalf, joined as always by Tyler Rucker. Rucker, how are we doing?
Metcalf, another glorious week of talking basketball with you. I'm doing good. We've had some fun this week. Another glorious, you know, stretch of basketball games in the college basketball world, some NBA games. I'm doing good. I'm ready for the weekend. How about yourself, my good friend?
I am fantastic. We have a meaningful amount of snow on the ground here now, so that part of the year is officially started. Oh, joy. The puppy turned 3 today, which is
congrats. Just depressing.
I scolded her and told her that she's not allowed to get older. She doesn't seem to be listening, though, so we'll just have to revisit that in another year. But, you know, kids, right? The worst. They just never listen. But we also had actual, like, meaningful basketball matchups in the college world this week really felt like the first time that college basketball was back. Obviously, it came back last week, but all of the good teams played on one day, and it was a bunch of tune-up games. And this week we had some really big time matchups that were a lot of fun.
Yeah, I mean, we wanted to talk about the Champions Classic. Obviously, for all the diehards out there, you probably had your fix of listening to plenty of recaps about the Champions Classic, but you're getting it from me and Metcalf on this episode, so it's going to have a little bit of spice on it. But no, some interesting games. We had a good crew on the playback stream. Thanks for everyone. The chat was hilarious. Yeah. We've been laughing about it all week. But yeah, we had Kentucky, Michigan State, double overtime. And then, you know, myself, Metcalf and Albert were on Duke, Kansas, and shout out to Michigan State and Kentucky for the double overtime, because I think, you know, we were up till way past our bedtimes. But, a lot to dissect, and I'm going to let you pick where you want to go, especially on the dog's birthday.
Yeah, so just before we dive into it, just a little housekeeping and just what this episode is going to entail. So we're just going to give our reactions to the Champions Classic and then the Gonzaga-Texas matchup, which was another just huge rankings and prospect matchup. Then we're going to dive into a preview of the tournament that Rucker is going to in Vegas this weekend. And then we're going to wrap the whole thing up with our Game of the Weekend segment, where we're going to preview the game that all of you voted on us to do a playback for this weekend, which is Houston, Oregon on Sunday. And then we'll dive into a little coach's corner with strategy and, you know, what we would kind of look for if we were on those coaching staffs. So before we get to all that, though, Champions Classic, it was a good one. I had a lot of fun, even though there were long stretches of, let's say, rough offense. Yeah. But let's start out with the first game, Michigan State versus Kentucky. What was your biggest takeaway from this game?
I thought it was a fantastic showing for Cason Wallace. I thought Michigan State showed that they're going to be the classic Tom Izzo team that, you know, as draft evaluators, we might not look at Michigan State this year and be like in awe of all the prospects they have. But, yep, you know, that's when Tom Izzo's teams are the most dangerous, because they just have a bunch of guys that can play together and be a little nasty. But Kentucky's going to be interesting this year. I think there's one guy that's clearly cementing himself as a legit prospect. And we're overreaction city right now in the draft space. I'm even having to calm down some of my No Ceilings faithful, even though I love all of those individuals. But I think everyone's a little excited. We're a little foaming at the mouth to be talking rankings and movement. And, you know, I'm also like, hey, let's pump the brakes. This is game 3 for most teams. But, you know, if we're going to overreact, because everyone likes to do that, I thought Cason Wallace made himself a lot of momentum up some boards with that showing. What about yourself, Metcalf? What were your thoughts?
I'm fascinated that that was kind of your takeaway, because and obviously when you look at Wallace's stat line, I mean, he produced in literally every column of it. So I'm not saying he had a bad game by any means, but he was also, you know, the biggest name recruit in this game. You know, when we look at projected draft ranges, he's pretty much head and shoulders above everyone else in this game. I came away from a little underwhelmed.
Is it because he didn't take the last shot? Can we just let this out?
No. There were a handful of times where he was in the lane and just didn't even look at the rim. It felt like he was way too passive at times. And maybe part of that is just his first time playing with Sevier Wheeler, or, you know, just in a big matchup playing with Sevier Wheeler and playing more of that off-ball role. Previous game I watched them, you know, he was the sole point guard. Sevier Wheeler was out, and Kaysen kind of just did a great job of managing the entire pace and flow of the game, and then still got his, especially in the paint. I think his interior scoring is really impressive with his touch on floaters, ability to absorb contact and finish through contact. And it just looked like he wasn't looking for it at all that whole game. So, and he made some beautiful passes, had some really nice scores. I'm not saying he had a bad game by any means, but it felt like he could have kind of taken that game over a little more, and he was just a little too passive.
I understand that completely. Everyone that wants to doubt that me and Metcalf are agreeing about this, we talked about our fear with Kentucky this year was the Wheeler experience kind of taking away from Wallace. And, you know, first game of the year, they're playing Howard. Wheeler doesn't play. Kaysen Wallace drops 15, 8, and 9 with two steals. He's 7-11 from the field, 1-for-2 from three. I thought it was beautiful. I thought he looked fantastic. I was like, this is exactly what I'm talking about. And then second game of the year, Wheeler comes back, plays 27 minutes, has 11 points, 6 rebounds, 11 assists. Looks great. But, you know, Wallace finishes in 27 minutes with 8 points, 3 rebounds, 4 assists, 2 steals. 3-for-6 from the field. So I think this game, in my head as an evaluator, I'm saying, okay, he can produce. Mm-hmm. He can be one of the best guys on the floor. But I'm right there with you. I think he's going to have to find a point in the season in which he realizes, okay, I'm the guy. I'm, you know, because he is trying to figure out how to play with Wheeler. And Wheeler's going to get his shots. Like, Wheeler's not, you know, Wheeler's light's always green, and I'm not trying to talk down about him, but I'm just saying when you're playing with someone like that, you have to also be able to be aggressive and get yours in your spots without being a ball hog. So I thought it was promising, especially from the defensive side of the ball, because he was just a pest. I also just thought it made evaluators or scouts kind of realize, like, okay, look, Kaysen Wallace is going to be a first round guy, a mid first round guy.
Yeah.
Now you just want to see, where does his trajectory go? Is he going to all of a sudden have a 5-game stretch this year where he really just starts to take over? Or is this what we're going to see the whole year? And then that will raise some questions, but I understand your doubts. I get it.
Yeah. And just to be clear, and I do have him in that mid first, my ranking or general view of him didn't really change drastically one way or the other at all. It's just, okay, this is a big game. It's really close. Like, I just want to see you take over a little more. And he was just a little too eager to kind of take the backseat role. It's like, you're the best guy on this team by a lot. And you can get to the rim whenever you want. Look for it. Force it a little bit. And he didn't. So it's obviously nitpicking. He didn't have a bad game. I just wanted a little bit more.
But that's a part of evaluation. For everyone listening, like, that is one of my favorite things to watch when you're evaluating a young talent, is like that situation where you're like, Kentucky needs someone to take this game over. And it's like, here you are. You're this high recruit. This is your moment to shine. And we see some guys that can step up to the plate early in the season with that confidence and be like, okay, I'm ready for this. Paolo Banchero last year, I think he pretty much has proven that he was worthy of where he got selected in the NBA. But beginning of the year last year, he was putting on a show. He rose to the occasion every time it was a, you know, national spotlight. And I think that's what you want to see with some of these guys. And obviously Kentucky's going to be on TV again, spoiler alert. So we're going to have to just see kind of where he goes. Cause I still want to figure out if Cason Wallace is a complimentary piece that's going to be a dang good guard at the NBA level, or if there's another level to his game that we haven't found out yet.
Yeah, and that's kind of what I'm talking about too, because like obviously the Jrue Holiday comp has been thrown out a bunch, including by you, and yep. You know, that's a top two, top three guy on a championship team. That's a really right. High threshold. Obviously, we all hope that Cason can get there, but just from that mentality standpoint, I just need to see him kick it up a little bit more, because I'm not quite seeing that out of him yet, but I'm seeing a damn good starter, damn good fourth or fifth option, you know? So I think he's going to be a really good player. I just want to see a little kind of, you know, fuck you attitude from him.
Complete agreement.
Someone who significantly underwhelmed, unfortunately, was a guy that we both liked coming into the season. And that was Chris Livingston. Yeah. Who has had a tough start to the year. I don't think either of us are necessarily surprised by that, but this has been a little rougher than I think we were anticipating.
Yeah, a lot rougher. I think me and you were both in the same, you know, zip code when we were talking about we really, really like Chris Livingston. We think he's going to be a really nice basketball player, but I would have been completely shocked if he just was coming out putting up 18 or 20 in the first couple of games, because I just don't know if that's the type of player he is right now. I think he's this guy that, unfortunately, when you're evaluating, you're going to have to wait and see. You're going to have to keep checking in and almost track him and be like, okay, look, it looks like the light switch is finally coming on. He's hunting his own shot. He looks like the things are slowing down. And right now it just looks like maybe a little too passive, or just still trying to figure out what's his role, where's his spots to get his shot, because it's just been a slow start, but I'm not overly concerned. It's just something that I'm monitoring, and it's one of those guys where I'm like, let's get 10 games in. If you haven't seen any growth, then it's like, okay, we're entering a territory of, you know, having a difficult conversation. But what about yourself?
And I just forgot that he was on the floor for a lot of the game, which, you know, is never a good thing. It feels like he's trying too hard, that he's overthinking everything. I liked his jumper in high school, and he has some really bad misses against Michigan State where he didn't even come close to the rim. On defense, you can tell that he's trying really, really hard to make those tags and rotations, but so much of it is resulting in him over rotating and over helping and completely leaving his guy wide open, that either results in a wide open jumper or him scrambling to recover. And then they just, you know, easily attack that sloppy closeout. So it feels like he's pressing right now. Like he's in his own head, that kind of confidence that he played with at Oak Hill isn't necessarily there right now. And that sucks, because I think there's a really good role player there, and I'm not quite sure how he's going to overcome that, because I think the talent is there. The athleticism is there. He's just struggling to figure out who he is kind of as a player in this team.
Yeah. Like as we're recording this, for everyone listening, Kentucky's playing South Carolina State. They're up 22 with 3 minutes left. Excuse me. Really good math by me. They're up 42 with 3 minutes left.
And those are different numbers.
Yeah. Livingston, I was so excited to make this point that I just became an idiot. Livingston's 3 for 5 from the field, 7 points and 4 rebounds.
Perfect. Love it.
So my point is like their first two games, they won by, here we go. Some more math for Tyler. They won by 32 and 25. Kentucky in those blowouts, they're playing a lot of guys' minutes. So Livingston's one of these guys that he's got to get into a flow of a game, get like extended run, because he's not going to be this guy that drops, you know, 26 or 27 points. He's your box score filler. So when you're blowing a team out, his numbers aren't going to look as great because he hasn't got enough run. And he's going to be an interesting one because I think it's just going to have to be, you're getting the teases. You have to almost be like, okay, well, what is he going to look like with 30 minutes instead of playing, you know, 18 or 19 minutes? I really, really like him. I really think he's a good basketball player, like you're saying. I just think we're going to have to wait and see. And he had a nightmare game against Michigan State, but, you know, they didn't play that much, many guys. I mean, it's just weird because the team also has some vets that they're going to, you know, Calipari is going to get to a point and be like, no, I know what Jacob Toppin's going to give me. I'm going to play him extended minutes, or Oscar's going to be on the court, just stuff like that.
All right. Well, speaking of Jacob Toppin, he continues to be one of these upperclassmen who just continues to impress me. I think he's a really good defender. He scored kind of in all three levels in that game. The shot, you know, it either looks beautiful or he misses the rim by like 2 feet. So, you know, I think that's I think he's working in the right direction with it. I still don't fully buy it with him, but everything else he does, he's showing a little bit more to his game, and with that ability to hit a mid-range pull up or get to the rim. So I think he's going to be one of these guys that, you know, a year from now, it wouldn't surprise me if he makes it onto an NBA roster. Oscar looked like Oscar. I mean, just a monster rebounding, tips and everything. I still think his touch at the rim is pretty hit or miss. He made a mid-range jumper, badly bricked another one. The defense looked better than last year, but still I wouldn't classify it as good. So either of those guys, any thoughts?
Toppin's one I need to spend some more time on. I feel like I just can't put a value on where I see him, because you've praised his defensive ability before, or you came away intrigued.
Yeah. Just like rewatching like their last five games or something from last year, is like, oh, okay, this dude's working and covering a lot of ground and a lot of positions. So I was really intrigued by it last year. And I think he's been a solid defender so far this year too.
Yeah. I mean, I just want to watch more of him. I kind of want him to get on a little bit of a stretch this year where it's like, does the really good five game stretch, like, okay, what started cooking? You dive into that stretch of games. They're about to finish their game. He ended up with 8-9-2, 4-for-8 from the field. Kaysen Wallace update, 12-2-3, 5-for-7. And then you just go see Wheeler. 6-3-10, which is just, you know, I mean, Wheeler's doing a good job distributing the ball, but it's just going to be interesting. I think Oscar's going to put up some crazy numbers this year. I kind of think we know what Oscar is, and it's just going to be interesting to see how NBA teams value that. I think he's going to get a shot because he's such a rebounding force. And if a team's like, we need just someone to rebound in the rotation, yeah, they're gonna throw either a two-way or a summer league invite, and you never know. Those are the guys that all of a sudden go to the G League, produce in the G League, and then all of a sudden an NBA team's like, yeah, okay, fine, he can rebound when we need him off the bench. But Oscar's fun. He had that bad lapse defensively that I feel like we were all screaming at the TV when it was happening in slow motion. But Kentucky's gonna be interesting to see. I think this team's gonna need a while to get their rhythm, you know, kind of come together.
Yeah. Well, the team who actually won the game was Michigan State. I didn't come away overly enthused about any of these guys as being NBA guys, at least this year. AJ Hogard, I think, is a name to kind of keep an eye on throughout the year. The defense, transition scoring, slashing, really physical guard. Jaden Akins is kind of, he just hasn't really hit the ground running like I thought he would. But then Maddie Sissoko might be the most intriguing guy. I mean, he's not super skilled, but as a vertical spacer, defender, rebounder, you know, he's looking to be a really serviceable big man who's just producing and playing super hard. And that's a lot more than you can say for a lot of centers.
Sissoko, I think, is going to be the one I want to kind of keep a close eye on moving forward. Hauser played great. I think we're going to have to keep an eye on him just because he looks like he could shoot it. I mean, I feel like in the Gonzaga game, he didn't wow me. And then all of a sudden against Kentucky, he goes crazy and he drops 23 and 8, 8 for 16 from the field, 4 for 7 from three, but just kind of had some movement shooting flashes. He's 6'9", 220. He's got a good size. His brother plays for the best team in the NBA. So, I mean, it's just going to be, I think Hauser's the one to keep an eye on. I had to throw that one in. Hauser mania. So I'm going to watch both of those guys. I'm intrigued. But, yeah, Michigan State's not the team we're hunting for, you know, first-round prospects. But they're going to have a couple guys that you got to keep an eye on. Izzo always makes those glue guys, those nasty ones that you want to pay attention to. You never know. Those NBA teams always do.
Yeah, well, the second game of the night was Duke versus Kansas, which had just NBA talent galore. This was a lot of fun to watch when we did the playback for it. What were your kind of big picture takeaways with it?
Oh, boy. You know, I was thinking about it today, and then now that you just asked me, I feel like I don't even know where to start. I feel like the first half was a lot of, not disappointment, but I feel like we felt empty. We were like, okay, no one's really pushing the needle as much as we wanted. And then the second half, it was like a whole different scenario. It was just like electric to start out. Duke woke up. Kansas looked like they had no idea what was going on. Filipowski impressed me. Mm-hmm. I've been lower on him going into the year. I just kept saying, like, I know how he looks good offensively. He has a great shot from outside. I said, I just want to see if he can stay alive defensively. And going into this game, I knew he was going to be going against some good opponents. Like, this was a good test for him. And thought he held his own at times. I thought he showed some quick feet. He just battled, and I respect that. And yeah. That's something that I think is going to, you know, when you're 7 foot and you battle and you play hard and you can potentially be an offensive weapon at the next level, I think you're going to get a lot of attention for some scouts. And it's been interesting with him, Metcalf, because going into the season, the buzz was that he wasn't looking great. And yeah. Now it seems like at times in that game, he was the reason why they were in that game. Like, so I don't know. I think Filipowski is the first name that impressed me just because I had lower expectations.
Yeah, no, I came away liking a lot of what he did. The defense I have some kind of concerns on, but he fought, he worked. I thought his feet, you know, there were some possessions where he was defending on the perimeter and he had really good feet. He has really high hips and, you know, a kind of a narrow base when he moves on the perimeter, but he's also like 7'1". So it's like, okay, like he's not going to be getting down in the stance and really sliding with guys like a guard would. So I came away really impressed with just, like you said, his competitiveness, his motor. I mean, he was battling guys on the post, first ever Duke freshman to have a double-double in his first three games, which is shocking just given the names that have run through there. But he scored in all three levels, competed defensively. I came away really impressed. His kind of center mate, also incoming freshman in Derek Lively, I came away less enthused about, but it was also his first game back. So, you know, that I am affording him quite a bit of leeway with that. So I'm not necessarily severely knocking him, but it was definitely a lackluster debut from Lively.
Yeah, I think he played one game before, but played like 6 minutes or something.
Excuse me.
So we could basically really consider this is his first game back. I got you. I got your back. I came away a little bummed, but I'm in the same boat as you. I was like, okay, let's another guy give me 10 games. And because he's, you know, coming to the party late, he showed up late. He showed up to the green room late. I've got to wait and see with him. I think the Lively is going to be a puzzling one throughout the year because there's flashes right now, but it's really dim flashes that are very rare. And you could see sometimes the game's going a little too fast. And sometimes I think he's just kind of this, he's trying to figure out what to do out there. Like he doesn't have his feet set. And that's why I'm saying I need to get like 10 games into the year with him before I'm going to overreact. But he looks like he's going to eventually be very fun, but I just don't know if it's going to turn into a potential top 10 pick. And that is my overreaction right now. But just from my first sample of seeing him on the court extended minutes, I think we commented a couple times on playback. We're like, oh, there's Lively. Like we didn't even know he's in. And it's not a good thing for a 7-1 center.
And that was the issue we had with him coming in.
Yeah, and Filipowski, I knew he was in the game. Yes. Like, he let everyone know he was in the game, but I'm just saying he was all over the place and exactly where you're going. Go ahead.
Yeah, so no, just an important correction. He did play 14 minutes against South Carolina upstate last Friday, so apologies. But he had 4 points in that game. He had 4 points against Kansas. Both of his buckets against Kansas were on tip dunks after Ernest Uday badly chased blocks and just left him wide open. I don't know if I'm concerned, if I'm fascinated, if I'm confused as to what his offensive role is going to be, but based on that Kansas game, they're barely even looking at him and he's barely looking at the rim. So I hope that we kind of start to see him evolve a little more out of just the offensive rebounding, tip dunking, rib running guy, because I think there's a little bit more skill there. I hope there's more skill there, but we just haven't seen it. I thought on the boards, he did a good job rebounding. He had a solid block. I think there's a ton of defensive potential with him. So once he's really in game shape and kind of running on all cylinders, hopefully that's where he really starts to emerge. But it's just that consistent effort and intensity and making an impact on the game. He struggled to do it consistently in high school, and so far, not seen a ton of that.
It's hilarious going back and looking at the box score. I did not realize Duke was 14% from three and Kansas was 15% from three.
Yeah, it was awful.
It felt like that, but I did not know it actually ended up like that. Yeah, I'm right there with you with Lively. There's plenty of flashes of potential. It's just, okay, I don't know how he's going to fit in offensively. I imagine when Tariq Whitehead comes back, we are going to find out a lot about this Duke team because they had moments in that game where it was like they badly need a guy.
Yeah.
And they need Tariq Whitehead in the worst way. And it's not, I'm not trying to bash any Duke faithful out there, but like Mark Mitchell, I thought his first game of the year was fantastic. I thought it was kind of like, I don't know if you're going to want to expect this all the time. We saw that in Kansas. If you want to talk about him, we can go ahead and into that.
Yeah, just real briefly, he was kind of the Chris Livingston of that second game. Like, I forgot he was on the floor for long stretches. He didn't really do anything. He had a couple dunks that were nice, but they were the result of some big defensive lapses. I thought he looked pretty rough, unfortunately, because like you said, their first game of the season, he looked really solid.
They just had a stretch of the game where I think it was mainly in the first half. We were like, who was going to step up? Like Filipowski was doing everything in his power. He ended up with 17 and 14, but he was 6 of 18 from the field.
Yeah.
And just no one had anything going. And I kept waiting for Mitchell to do some stuff and it was just not really there. And I don't, That's what I'm saying with Mark Mitchell. I think everyone got really excited about that first game. And it was like, I don't think that's going to be what Mark Mitchell is. I think he's going to have to slowly become this really potentially nice, you know, complimentary piece of the puzzle. But I thought it was going to be a big opportunity for him, and I left there a little underwhelmed. So those are rough games as evaluators, because then you have to go back and you're like, all right, I'm just going to watch him defensively. Like, maybe he did something defensively.
Yeah, so that they're awesome off-ball stuff that he was doing. Yeah.
That's where you get into the grind. And in the middle of the year, you're like, oh, boy. Okay, Mark Mitchell versus Kansas, just defense. Here we go.
Well, someone who I thought did step up in a big way, especially after being almost a ghost in the first half, Tyrese Proctor was awesome in the second half. He looked really confident. Operating out of the pick and roll, had some beautiful jumpers, attacked the rim, made some gorgeous skip passes out of the pick and roll. And then, you know, we just talked about defensively, he denied Grady Dick the ball for 18 of the 20 minutes in the second half. I thought Proctor was sensational in that second half.
Yeah, it was. I feel like we were almost like rooting as fans in the second half when he touched the ball. We were like, come on, man. Like just some, because he's just been off to a brutal start this year. And at halftime, you're just like, oh boy, this kid like reclassified, had all this buzz coming in the year. And he just looks like a ghost out there. He looks completely lost. Then he hit his first shot. It was nice. And then I feel like he hit his next shot, and I was like, and we were like screaming on playback. We were like, here we go, Tyrese. All right, get a little confidence. And then you could see it was almost just like this lightning went through his body, because he was just like, yeah, let's go. Like, finally, I hit a jump shot. And we were like, yeah, we know. So he looked great, man. I thought he competed. And those are the games I get so excited about, because you get so pumped up to watch the next performance. Cause you're like, hey, this might have needed to be just what Tyrese Proctor needed to all of a sudden go on a nice little stretch of like the next game you look up and Tyrese Proctor drops, you know, 18 with 6 assists. And you're like, uh-oh, here we go. Like he's starting to believe. But I even thought to myself during that I was like, I want to go back and watch him defensively in the second half, because I thought we said on the playback stream, I was like, where is Grady Dick been? And then I was like, has Proctor been guarding him the whole time? So that's what I'm talking about. Confidence is a dangerous thing in the sport of basketball.
Yeah. Well, let's pivot to Kansas and Grady Dick, who I thought was solid in the first half, disappeared for most of the second half, but then closed really strongly. I saw a lot on social media about how he may be the worst college defender ever. I thought that was a bit harsh.
Whoa, I didn't see that.
I wouldn't classify him as an elite defender by any means, but I thought he was acceptable for what he is as a player. I really like that he showed that even when his outside shot isn't falling at a really high clip, that he still has other ways of contributing with how he finished at the rim. He had some grown man finishes. There's an and one in transition against Mark Mitchell, a really acrobatic reverse layup after a nice back cut. So his off ball movement, his scoring versatility, he's going to get pegged as just a shooter, but I think he's way more than just a shooter.
I mean, if the other team shoots 14% from three and 35% from the field, I don't know how you get ranked as the worst defender of all time. But we'll go watch the tape. he had some stuff in the first half that I was like, my goodness. I was like, the up and under was gorgeous. I think we talked about during the playback stream, we were like, he really moves away from the ball. Like he could be a problem, you know, as a cutter, as a movement shooter. So I'm starting to buy in a lot. He had a very quiet 14 after having a very loud first half. Because at one point in the second half, I was like, man, I feel like he hasn't done anything. I feel like he's not even touching the ball. Like, I feel like he hasn't even played for a while. I was like, what's going on? And then.
And all of that, it was Proctor who was just denying him the ball. Proctor stopped helping off of him. It was just his sole assignment. Chase Grady Dick around screens. Do not get back cut. Just stay with him and only him.
Yeah. The Proctor second half performance probably going up against Grady Dick is something to watch, because it probably was very impressive. And that's also something you want to monitor moving forward for Grady Dick. But because now someone's going to watch that and someone's going to be like, hey, I might have figured a way to slow down, you know, Kansas's lethal shooter. But I came away impressed with him regardless of the quiet second half. I thought he did a lot of stuff in that first half that really impressed me, and I'm intrigued. You were hot on that trailer to start the year, and he came into that game guns blazing, and then I thought in the first half showed a lot of what he's been doing in the other games, and then just someone locked him down. Duke probably went into halftime and said, someone please shut Grady Dick up, like, on the court. I'm tired of watching him score. And then someone did it. And that's why Duke got back in that game and had a chance.
I did think that Jalen Wilson was pretty easily the most impressive Kansas player, though. And he has been all season. He's stepped into kind of that Ochai Agbaji role from last year, where he's taking on a lot of the offensive initiation and defensive responsibilities. I love how physical he is defensively, really good rebounder. And then some of just the offensive initiation stuff that he started showing this year is really important for just his long-term projection, because he had some gorgeous pick and roll snake dribbles where he just patiently snaked through the lane, finished on the other side, used his guy to like rescreen the drop defender and just create another little opening, confidently shot from the mid range. The outside shot didn't fall, but it's been okay this year. He's just one of these guys where, even though he's acting as that primary initiator for Kansas, I implore people not to view him as that going into the NBA, but instead of how he can then use those skills that he's displaying in that role this year as a role player, an off-ball guy next year or in the future in the NBA, where, okay, this is a guy who can run in transition and, you know, set guys up, or who can run a second side pick and roll, or who can attack a closeout and hit a mid-range jumper or finish at the rim or dump it off or skip it out. So just because he's that guy this year doesn't mean he's going to be that in the NBA, because that's an impossible role to break into for 99% of players. Instead, look at what he's doing this year and how he can then leverage that into being an awesome off-ball player in the NBA.
I loved what I saw from him in that game. I mean, he finished 11 for 26 from the field, which people are going to hear that and be like, what? But it was the mentality that Kansas was in a lull, and he was just like, to hell with it. I'll get on my back. I'll figure it out. And he had some misses. He had some tough takes that just didn't fall. And then he had some really impressive makes, and he ended up with 25, 11, and 5. I mean, he's putting up numbers that, like, you don't, those are NBA box scores. You don't see those a lot in college basketball. He's on the year averaging 21, 10, and 4, shooting splits 44, 30, and 87. It was, the 3-point shoot percentage was way higher, but last game he had an 0 for 7. So let's put a little asterisk by that. But he couldn't get the shot to fall from outside. I thought he was great with just being like, to hell with it. I'm going to start creating around the basket. I'm going to be aggressive. I thought he was tough. I thought he showed versatility. I thought he just really looked like a guy that's going to play at the next level. I thought Jalen Wilson looked fantastic. And I'm right there with you. I think watching him this year, don't watch him as a guy that's like, oh, okay, he's going to try to be the guy at the next level. No, I think he's just showcasing he can do anything. And, you know, he had an 0 for 7 from outside. He was on fire coming into this game. I won't be surprised if all of a sudden that 3-point percentage starts going back up in a hurry. And, you know, if he ends up being a 40-40-80 guy that is, you know, 6'8 with versatility, yeah, an NBA team's going to add him to their rotation pretty damn quick. So I thought Jalen Wilson was the best guy on the court on both teams that night. I really did. I thought it was clearly one guy stood out to me in terms of being an NBA player, and that was Jalen Wilson. Now that story could change in 3 months. All of a sudden, there could be some Duke guys that look a little bit more ready. But I thought Jalen Wilson looks like an upperclassman that's been working his butt off and is ready for the next step. And I'm excited to watch him the whole year. I've never been excited to watch Kansas basketball, and I'm excited this year.
Yeah, and a couple other guys, Kevin McCullough, I thought had a solid game. Defensively, I thought he was awesome. Some of the quickest and most accurate hands on defense in the country. His corner three looked really good. Above the break, not so much. Just one of those guys who's just a solid two-way player. I think I'd be shocked if he doesn't find his way onto an NBA roster. KJ Adams, I adore him. He just does all of the dirty shit that no one else wants to do. And he is so strong and consistent and agile. Can't shoot worth a lick, but I just think he's one of those players that that coaches and fans just fall in love with. And then a couple of their younger big men, Ernest Udeh, I thought he was pretty rough with his defensive discipline. He was chasing blocks all over the place. Some of his pick and roll coverages were awful and just gave up wide open dunks. But then Zubi Ejiofor, apologies on pronunciation. I thought he looked really good. That was the first time I really saw him in extended minutes, and he looked more disciplined defensively. You know, offensively didn't really do anything, but wasn't asked to, had a couple blocks, rebounded really well. So it'll be interesting to see how their big man rotation kind of ends up falling into.
Udeh, I'm right there with you. He looked like a guy that was trying to chase way too much. I think he just needs to calm down, and another guy like middle season, let's check in, see how he's progressing. But he ended up with 4 blocks in 13 minutes, but he was trying to have 15. Zubi?
Z-U-B-Y, isn't that how it's spelled?
I like that. Okay, I was intrigued with him. I thought he made me write his name down to be like, okay, mm-hmm. I need to pay attention. McCullough, I love McCullough. I love the way he plays the game. I think McCullough is going to play at the next level. He had 12, 6, 2, 1 steal, 2 blocks on 5 of 10. I for sure think he's going to figure a way to play at the next level. I really like KJ Adams too. I'm trying to figure out how does he get on a roster, or is he playing another year at Kansas? And
I think he plays another year because he's not going to put up the numbers where it's like, oh, okay. Because he's just one of those guys where you really have to hone in on him and see just all of the little shit that he does.
He seems like he's on the Jalen Wilson path, but he needs to next year just have any sort of shot and then be averaging 15 and 10 somehow, or 15 and 9, and being really nasty, energetic guy, because there's some times he makes some plays where you're like, my goodness, you know, he had that humongous chase down block. And I wanted to bring up a point. Grady Dick had that kick out to McCullough, and that was, we were watching that stream, and I was like, whoa, that was a great corner kick to McCullough. Yeah. So a lot of interesting guys. I'm right there with you about McCullough. That guy can play. It's just, he needs to find the right team that's patient with that development, because he plays winning basketball. He's just never going to be a guy that averages 20.
Absolutely. Well, the other big game of the week was Gonzaga against Texas.
Yeah.
And this got ugly. Texas won 93-74. Talk to me.
I mean, some people – I talked to the streets earlier, and the streets are saying that Texas is back. I don't know if you've heard this, but
well, I mean, so I don't know if everyone else saw this, but Texas just has a brand new basketball arena, which they downsized because they couldn't sell out the older one. And apparently the number two team in the country still doesn't warrant a sellout. So Longhorn fans, your football team sucks. It's okay. Go to a basketball game. They're fun. Go watch a basketball game.
I literally watched a game at the old gym, and I was like, wait, when I heard they were redoing or getting a new one, I was like, why? The old one was nice. What are you guys doing? But the place was rocking.
Money for it.
Yeah, exactly. I think they're pretty well funded. There's a lot to take in with this game.
Yeah.
Trying to figure out where I want to start. Let's just start with the obvious. Tyrese Hunter is... That was a statement game.
Yeah.
Tyrese Hunter better be going up a lot of people's draft boards. I thought he was sensational with his shot selection. He had a couple fakes to take a dribble in and take a little elbow jumper. I was like, that's a point guard. That is exactly what you're supposed to do. Don't chase the three. And I just thought he played poised. He played under control. He played at a different speed than the number two team in the country. So I came away just extremely impressed with Tyrese Hunter. I'm already trying to figure out where, how much is ridiculous to move him up, because he's scorching.
Yeah. Yeah. So, and he had 26 points on 9 of 14 from the floor, 5 of 8 from three, three rebounds, 2 assists, 1 steal. He just looked so comfortable and just unaffected by any pressure. And I have him, I think, like fringe first round right now, because coming into this year is like, okay, yes, he's an elite point of attack defender. He's a good passer. He's a good at rim finisher who doesn't shy away from contact, despite being on the smaller side for a point guard. At that size, though, you have to shoot. In that game, he shot the shit out of that ball.
Yes, he did.
And he's been shooting pretty well for this season. If that sustains, I think he's going to be a first round guy at the end of the year.
Yeah, watching. When I usually watch guys in games, I try to just throw a number out of like, okay, what does he look like? And watching Tyrese Hunter against Gonzaga, I said, that's a first round pick. And it's pretty easy. Like, it just depends on where, how much do you love him? And he just looks so damn good. And he shot the ball with confidence. Like, he was hunting his shot at one point. So you want to see now if that's going to keep up, because, you know, as Metcalf hinted, He went on a tear last year for Iowa State in the tournament. He was the talk. Everyone was talking about Tyrese Hunter because he was just putting on some impressive shows. And coming into this year, when he announced he was going to transfer to Texas, everyone was like, just if that outside shot, shot is the only thing. And we say it about so many guys, but with Tyrese Hunter, it was like, you have to have it if you're going to be an undersized point guard. But man, last night he looked just sensational, and he's a pest defensively. So I'm going to be excited to watch him throughout the year, because he can piss people off on defense. Like, he had a high number of steals. I really like Tyrese Hunter. He's the guy that the first couple of games of the year I'm the most excited about now, because I'm like, there's a nasty point guard in Texas now rising to the surface with some confidence, and I'm excited.
Well, the other big name on Texas is Dylan Mitchell, and
I'm struggling, Metcalf. I'm struggling.
Yeah. I loathe what they allow him to do on offense. It's
what
like
what do they allow him
to stand in the corner, and if he leaves it, he gets like shocked with a shock collar. It's like the dog who tears into the garbage every time you leave the house. So you just put him you corner him off and put him in a little playpen, and it's infuriating. Like, just show me that he can't do it, or allow him to take a corner three or something, because even the screens that he was setting, besides garbage time late, they were like pin down screens for other guys who are in the corner already. And whoever was guarding him on Gonzaga was basically having 2 feet in the lane the entire time while he was standing in the corner, and the guards for Texas just never looked at him. So maybe he just is a complete offensive liability. And maybe that's it. Maybe it's that simple, but I mean, he's just not even being allowed to show that he's completely inept on offense.
They're treating him like he's Clint Capella, with like four really good shooters around him that they're like, hey, just rebound and clean up the dirty work.
Yeah.
His stats this year are hilarious. He's averaging 7.3 points, 8.3 rebounds in 20 minutes. He's shooting 91.7% from
zero dunks.
It's all dunks. I mean, he had first game of the year, he had 4 and 4 in 20 minutes. Second game of the year in 18 minutes, he had 10 and 12 with a block. And Gonzaga, he finishes with 8 and 9. And it's just kind of one of those, like, we came into the year and we were like, hey, he's got a lot of talent, a lot of athleticism. Are we going to see anything other than the dunk show around the basket? And that's what we're going to have to keep waiting for. I just feel, I don't know. I don't know if he's a weird one, because are we going to have to kind of just fascinate with the small sample size the whole year because of his role? Or are we going to think it's this bad role he's in? Or are we thinking maybe he gets to a point where it's like, hey, maybe he needs another year? There's no ridiculous idea right now. If people are like, hey, I'm moving him down 15 spots, I'm like, okay, I don't blame you. Are you moving him down?
He's in my second round now.
I
had him at like 14 going into that game. And it's like, I want to believe, but like, when that's all you're showing me, I can't in good faith have you as a top 20 guy when the only shot you take is a garbage time pick and roll lob.
My overreaction board, I was just having fun with moving around today, and I didn't want to admit this on the air to you because I knew you'd probably, you know, send me some hate texts later. But yeah, I moved him. I had him around 13, 14. I've moved him past the 20s now. That's all I'll say. And like everyone, I'm the king of please be patient and wait. I'm just moving guys around right now because I'm going to start moving them back up and stuff. But I don't know about him. It's just going to be one of those. He's going to be I'm going to say this right now. He's going to be the annoying guy that just is quiet all year. And then they get to the tournament and he has a damn 15 and 13 game and hits 2 threes. And I'm going to be like, what's going on? And then I'm a big son of a, there it is. And then, but I don't know. Texas is going to be fun. I thought Tyrese Hunter though stole the show.
Yeah, well, let's quickly talk about Gonzaga. This is the worst Gonzaga offense I can remember in a long time. They look awful.
Yeah, I've got some. I need a vent. I need a. Can we vent? I got a vent,
please,
about something.
Please.
It was brought up last night in the No Ceilings group chat that a certain player on Gonzaga is not getting the love he was once getting from some people on our panel. And I don't like it. I've gone back and watched him, and I'm talking about Julian Strother. I've gone back and watched him. I must be seeing something wrong because I think he's exactly what I've thought he was going to be. This is exactly what Julian Strother does. And maybe it's everyone thinking that he was going to take this humongous leap. I just think we know what he is. I think he's a floor spacer, a potential 3-and-D guy that rebounds like his life is depending on it. And I don't know if people were expecting this year at Gonzaga he was going to go up and put up 20 a game. I wasn't. I just thought he was going to be more efficient and rebound the crap out of the ball. But am I crazy? You can tell me yes. I'll sleep fine tonight. I just – it's been in my head all day.
I have him at 31.
There's nothing wrong with that. If you got him at 31, I would be doing a backflip if I was front office.
I think he's a solid defender. I think he's a good shooter. I know the shot hasn't fallen at the level that we wanted. He's also the best rebounding wing in the country, or one of the best. I love his off-ball movement. He's shown a little bit more in terms of attacking off the dribble, whether out of isolations or attacking closeouts. Yeah, I don't know. He's stepping into such a more prominent role on a team with a lot less talent than there was last year. So I think some drop-off in the raw box score numbers shouldn't come as a surprise, but more so look at what he's doing. and how he's doing it and what he's being asked to do and how he's kind of contributing to this team, because I do think it is in a bigger role than what he had last season. And I just, nothing about what he's done has been like, oh my God, last year was a fluke, or like, this dude's washed. He looks very similar to what we saw last year.
Well, and I love everyone at No Ceilings, and they don't agree with me a lot, and I'm fine with that. I'd still sleep great. But he averaged 11-5-1 last year on 49-36-70. Three games so far this year. He's 14-6 with two steals and 46-41-78. I'm not thinking Julian Strother's ever going to be a, you know, superstar, but if you got him at 31, oh my gosh, what a great selection. What a great value pick, because Julian Strother, we might look up and he plays 13 years at the NBA because he's just a great seventh or eighth guy. There's nothing wrong with that. That's how you all of a sudden start to win championships, is you get guys like Julian Strother late. Now I'm pissed off. Okay. That's all I had. I thought Strother's looked great. I think this team's terrible.
Yeah, they suck. I hate their offensive approach.
And the problem is I love so many of their players.
Yep. They're Sherbold, missing Nolan Hickman. Big fans of.
They're missing a guy, and they need Timmy to not be the number one. And they're Timmy, it's amazing looking at his box score and seeing he went 7-for-10 last night. Cause watching that game, I thought he was like 3-for-15. So that's
well,
why.
Yeah, but then you look over a few columns and you see the 5 turnovers.
Yeah. And you're like, okay, that makes sense.
Right. Levels. And that's my issue with this Gonzaga team right now, is their offense. Everything is just feed it to Timmy in the post and clear out. And it's like, they're treating it almost like an NBA audition tape for him, where it's like, oh my God, look at these awesome post moves. We know already that he's awesome in the post. We know it. You're not the biggest center. You're not the most athletic center. You're not a rim protector. So just spamming these post moves over and over and over and over again without actually utilizing the threat of the three-pointer like they have in these last couple seasons, it makes it super easy to guard. Every time the ball went down to him in the post, they double or tripled him. He kicked it out, and second rotation was there. And their sole offensive focus was, all right, put it back into the post. It's an awful offense right now. They look horrible. I hope they start giving their guards a little more leeway to dictate what they do on either end, but who knows?
Well, and Hickman and Strother, I was giving our squad a bad rep, but I think why people might be cooling on them is because they had 4 turnovers each last night. And I think it's part of the offense of like, they don't, everyone's just like, hey, feed Timmy. And it's like, you got to play a system. Timmy's going to get his.
There's so much less movement of players and ball than there were these last two seasons. Obviously, when you have Kispert, Suggs, Holmgren, Nembhard, it's a little easier to do that. But a lot of these guys were in that system last year. They know the system. Run the system. Have people move around that isn't just Drew Timmy fighting in the post for position.
It's making Andrew Nembhard and Chet look pretty damn good right now. But I'm not trying to rag on Gonzaga, but I'm just watching that team. I was like, this ain't a top 5 team right now. This is not a team. They've got a lot to figure out, and they have the talent that they can figure it out, but they just look like a team that's never played before together. And I don't know if they need to all of a sudden feed Strother more, because Strother looks like their best outside shooter. He hit a couple shots last night where it was just like they needed a desperate shot. He just came, all right, fine. And he's shooting confident. I'm fine with him. Nolan, I need Nolan Hickman to have a moment of like anger that he all of a sudden is like, screw this, I'm going to drop 15 tonight. Because I feel like he just is too passive.
He looks like he's unsure of what his responsibilities are on offense.
I like how you put that.
But all right. Well, all you right.
Yeah, move on.
You are headed to Vegas this week for some games. So I'm going to let you kind of preview what you're excited about, what you're looking for, what you're expecting to see.
I am heading to Vegas tomorrow. As you're listening to this, I will be on the road. I'm jumping in a car, driving 5 hours. Gonna watch 2 games, and then I'm gonna drive back 5 hours.
Woo!
And for everyone that's worried about me, one word: coffee. We've got Baylor. It's the Continental Main Tire or Main Event. Yeah, Continental Tire Main Event. There you go. See how excited I am? It's Baylor. Yeah,
just a really historic and storied tournament.
Yeah, everyone knows this. It's one of the biggest tournaments since, you know, the 80s. Baylor Bears, UCLA Bruins, Illinois, and Virginia are the 4 teams expected to go. I'm pretty pumped about this one. I want to see Baylor. Obviously, going to see Keontae George, but that entire team, I'm excited to get a up-close look at. UCLA, I mean, I'm just excited to see kind of Hame from last year. They've got some guys that are really starting to buzz, too. Amari Bailey, obviously. Who's our boy? Who's the – oh, gosh, who am I blanking on? Who's starting to roll that Albert's been hyping up that I need to watch?
Jalen Clark.
Jalen Clark, thank you. I had a little brain fart there. And then Illinois, Terrence Shannon. I'm going to – just when I'm out, they pull me back in. It's literally what I'm going to be saying the whole time watching them. So I want to see what they can do. Sky Clark, then Virginia. You know, just – it's going to be some fun games. I'm really pumped, though, to get an up-close look at Keontae George. It's one of those things where – I was mapping out the whole calendar for scouting events this year. I saw that one in Vegas, and I said, well, unless I'm going to go fly to Texas, I better get there and see what all the hype's about with Keontae George, and he'll probably go 2 for 15, but that's okay. This is why we do it.
Yeah, well, those should be some really fun games, and hopefully we get the championship of that on Sunday, and it's the championship that we want.
Yeah, and UCLA Baylor will be great. No, Villanova or Virginia Illinois.
Yeah, that'll be a barn burner. But that'll be fun. Excited to see the content that and just your reaction from being in person. But before we wrap up, we gotta preview our game of the weekend, and yeah, this is going to be a regular segment that we start ending our Friday pods with, because we're going to start doing weekly playback streams every single weekend, and we're gonna let the fans decide which one we do. So this week, you all spoke, you voted, democracy won out, and game of the weekend is Houston versus Oregon on Sunday. So Rucker and I will actually be the ones doing that one. We may have another teammate or two, but if you guys want to come hang out, watch, ask questions in the chat, jump on stage and talk with us, break down some of the game with us, more than welcome. Makes it so much more fun when you do it. We've had a blast doing these so far. But Rucker, when you look at this Oregon Houston matchup, what really stands out to you?
Well, I mean, the reason why we were so excited, we had some games up to let the fans decide. And I feel like I was secretly like, please let us watch Houston. Please let us watch Houston. And then you guys chose that. And I was like, thank you. I love everyone. I'm really pumped about this Houston Cougars team. Even more than I feel like me and you were going into the season. They've been nasty. They look just like an unstoppable force lately. And Marcus Sasser's off to a great start. I think Jairus Walker's look fantastic. I just think this team is deep, and they're not going to have a ton of guys that, you know, put up humongous numbers, but they have depth, and they can run, you know, 8 guys deep at you all game, which is Houston loves to do that. They love to just get the guys they're going to play, you know, with their hair on fire. And I just really think there's a ton of talent on this team. So I'm excited to see what they can do. Going up against like a team like Oregon, Pac-12s, just, you know, no offense to those other teams, Pac-12s another world right now. So like, let's see Houston. And I'm not saying I don't think they won't have any problem with Oregon, but I also want to see, you know, Jairus Walker going against, you know, Khalil Ware and see how he holds up. So I'm really excited to do this game with you.
Yeah, and I think the biggest names to keep an eye on for Oregon, Khalil Ware tops the list pretty easily. Then I think a couple other guys who are intriguing, maybe potential summer league invites down the road, and Fali Dante at center.
Yes.
Nate Biddle's had a strong start to the season. Will Richardson, who's been there for about 42 years. And then Quincy Gurrier on the wing. Couple older upperclassmen. Besides Ware, I think he's kind of the only one on Oregon who's like a real name to keep on top of your mind in terms of the draft. But then on Houston, I mean, Jairus Walker, I expect him, and we've had him as a top five guy for a couple months now. Terrence Arsenault, it'd be nice to see a breakout game from him. Marcus Sasser's looking like a top 20 guy at least. And then Jamal Shedd and Tremont Mark have also had some big games for Houston. So they have a bunch of guys who can really punish you in a variety of ways. I think this is going to be a really, really good matchup for and a good opportunity for Walker to hopefully go head to head against Ware and just kind of see who ends up winning out.
Yeah. I mean, Nafali Dante is, I'm sorry if I pronounced his first name wrong. I swear I was practicing on it earlier, but he's a load.
He's huge.
He's I watched his
former five-star recruit, I believe, too.
He's senior. He's big. This is an exciting game because this is going to be a real damn good test for Walker. I almost think he might spend more time guarding Dante than even Ware, because Dante is a beast. I mean, he does a lot of his damage around the basket and on the boards, and he's energetic. He throws people around. Like he can really, you know, all of a sudden get that heater going and get that feeling really good where he's, you know, rebounding like Charles Barkley. But I mean, he's leading the team. He's averaging 14 and 8, and he's averaging 1.7 blocks per game. He's just one of those, like, you got to keep him off the boards. But I think this is a great test for Walker because he's going to have some size. He's going to have some power around him. He's going to have some length around him. And let's see how he holds up. But to go off your point, you know, Houston's guards are no joke. They got just gadgets galore with their roster. I mean, they just all mesh so well. It's not like every guy needs to score 20. Yeah, a lot of guys just love playing with each other. So it's going to be fun. I'm excited, as you can
see. Yeah, and just to your point about who Walker is going to match up against, I mean, he's the tallest guy on the roster who's played more than 4 minutes this year, and he's listed at 6'8".
Yeah.
It'll be interesting. Right. But I think that's a good spot to kind of pivot into our coach's corner. So what we're going to do is just pretend that we're on the coaching staff for these, we each have a team, and just kind of general game plan stuff that we would look to implement if we were being asked about it. So Rucker, you at Houston, what were you thinking?
Yeah. So for everyone listening, I spent a year overseas coaching, and I have not used this part of my brain for a while. So when Metcalf asked me to do this, I was like, wow, you're asking me to really dive deep into my brain to talk X's and O's, but let's do it. Let's get weird. Oregon could do some damage around the basket, especially with the bigs I just brought up. Like that's their bread and butter, is Dante going to work in there. Ware's shown the ability to stretch the floor from outside, but I'm not going to, you know, be afraid if Ware's chucking up three pointers all night. They can't shoot. Oregon's 3-point shooting, I think their top three guys, or I'm sorry, yeah, their top three guys, two of them are centers. Everybody else is under 30%. So Oregon's been getting a lot of zone thrown at them, and I hate zone more than anything in the world, and I'm preparing that we're going to get a lot of zone coverage on a playback, which I hate watching against. But, you know, Houston, it'll be funny to see if Samson wants to swallow his pride and be like, nah, we're playing man, or if Samson's going, no, you guys can't shoot threes. Because Ware's one of their best shooters from three, and he's, you know, he's not playing heavy minutes yet, but that's kind of what I would do. I would, if I'm Houston also, I think you have the depth and they've got a lot of bigs they like to rotate, I would run them to death. I would be trying to push the floor and transition and let Marcus Sasser and Shed kind of do their thing. But it's going to be interesting. You got to keep Dante off the boards. That's the one thing. If Jairus Walker can keep him off the boards, they have a very, very good shot of opening that game, in my opinion, because he does a lot of his damage on the offensive glass. He loves to clean up the garbage, and Walker's going to have the strength and the girth to kind of out muscle him. So that's going to be, that would be my mentality, Metcalf. I hope I passed the test for the first one, and I hope you're proud.
No, this is perfect because that falls in line of a lot of what I'm suggesting. So, obviously I had Oregon, and you know, I was looking through their roster and, you know, tendencies and numbers and everything this year. And, you know, first thing I look at, 3-point percentage as a team, 30% on the year. What that tells me is we're not shooting any fucking threes on Sunday. Unless you are wide the fuck open, you are not shooting it. And we're going to milk the clock. I want to see a too big lineup of Dante and Khalil Ware.
Yes.
So even if, you know, if Ware does get the open three, sure, you he's allowed to take it. That guy can take it. But I want them dominating the defensive glass, because that's how Houston made that really deep tournament run last year, was just being absolute menaces on the offensive glass. So limit second chance points, control the pace, slow it down, really muck it up with the two big guys who are just going to dominate inside. Because like we said earlier, Houston doesn't have anyone over 6'8 who plays actual minutes. And I want this to just be an ugly, ugly game if I'm Oregon. And that means controlling the glass, controlling the pace, not letting Houston get out and run. Because with if we start taking threes and they're going to start bricking threes, that means long rebounds, and now Shed and Sasser and Walker are sprinting the other way, and they're going to finish, because Oregon's backcourt, not only can they not shoot, but they're also not uber athletic. Great combination. So expecting big game from Ware, big game from Dante, and just absolutely controlling the interior on both ends of the floor.
Yeah, I mean, and everyone might look up to three-point shooting and be like, hey, wait a sec, Houston's shooting 29% as a team. And it's like, yeah, but Houston's also scoring 10 points per game more, because they just run to death. They get shots up. They want to play fast. And that's why I think you're spot on. If I'm Oregon, you got to drain the crap out of the clock. You got to play slow. You got to play in the half court. You know, the two big lineup, I would, in a weird way, it's almost like I think you got to play Ware extended minutes now. I think you got to, if you're going to have a shot against Houston, and it'll be interesting. I actually like this. This is a great idea by you, because I feel like by the end of the year, we'll be like, okay, we need to run horns at the top with, you know.
But hey, if we start getting super weird with it and implementing our own offensive philosophies and schemes, I'm all for it.
I'll be so proud. And then we'll get some film. Get some film breakdowns. I would love that.
We're just going to be on here for 3 hours.
Yeah. Like a live event. But no, I mean, I am excited, because just the Houston, it's kind of like I could see a blowout. I could see it being a very good game for evaluation purposes for Ware and for even Sasser. I mean, Sasser's putting up good numbers this year. He's also had a very green light from outside. So I'd like to see him have a game where he's a little bit more efficient from 3-point range. It is in Oregon?
I believe
I spaced out. Oh, no. You know why? That's bad news, folks.
Oh, we get that court, don't we?
We get that court.
Oh, fuck.
Yeah. Wow. I might have to. Now, I don't know what to do. I had a joke and I didn't like it.
Well, I'm proud of you for pulling the ripcord and bailing on it. But it's going to be, we're going to have a lot of fun with it. So please come hang out with us. Games at 8:30 Central on ESPN. So come, the playback link will be shared all over our socials. Just come hang out, ask questions in the chat, ask to come up on stage and talk to us. We're friendly. We like talking basketball or any other weird things that you guys want to talk about. So make sure to come hang out with us for that game. Rucker, this was a blast. Please plug away.
I'm at NoCeilingsNBA.com and at Tyler_Rucker on Twitter. With all the rumors of Elon Musk, you know, doing some stuff to Twitter, I don't care. I'm going to be there till the ground burns. So we can always talk on Twitter. Just message me, hit me up, tag me, whatever you fun people like to do these days. And yeah, come join us Sunday. Me and Metcalf get a little weird on that. It's basically going to be like a podcast with basketball going on in the same time. So you get the best of both worlds, and we're going to have some fun. And you know, that game should be pretty crazy regardless. Even if it's a blowout, there's going to be a lot of excitement. And I think it's going to be a really, really good scouting game to look back on. So thank you, Metcalf, as always, and have yourself a good weekend. And I'll see you Sunday.
You too, sir. Once again, I am Tyler Metcalf. You can follow me on Twitter at TMetcalf11. And you can find all of our work at NoCeilingsNBA.com. It's 100% free. Just click that subscribe button to make sure that you never miss anything that gets published, like my Jet Howard off-ball movement piece that will be up on Friday when you are listening to this. You can follow us across all socials at NoCeilingsNBA and on YouTube at NoCeilingsTV. If you enjoyed this episode, please make sure to subscribe, leave a review, and a 5-star rating. Until next time, see ya.